It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 20th day of September. September is two-thirds gone. The 20th day of September, 2023. This is the Horn HeadOn.live. It's where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany Real-Time Madcap Multimedia Extravaganza. It is the Horn Chat Room, the 3 hours in which this program is live Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between, and the great globe round. And where if you do pop into the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers, Anatole and Squeaky, and capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist, Chief Mathematician, and Bug Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon, who is baking bread at the moment. Nice. Hi, I'm Robin. It's Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. The deacons are just now wrapping up down in the Fellowship Hall kitchen. It was Salisbury steak and mashed potatoes and gravy and green beans with some lovely yeast-raised dinner rolls and some of that Jell-O-based lemon cheesecake that they love so well. That's why the little old blue-haired ladies and little old blue-haired men and little old blue-haired non-binaries who work down the Fellowship Hall kitchen. That's why they love work, because there's no leftovers with the deacons. There just aren't. You can understand why. That being the case, we'll get to some Prayer Meeting Wednesday stuff along the way, but every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. And this program is no different. And so we say thanks to our 20th day of the month subscribers. That means thank you to Armand. And thank you to Ralphs. And thank you to Dr. John in New Mexico. Thank you to Vincent. And thank you to Reverbo. Thank you all for being partial sponsors of the program. Thank you to Emilio for jumping in. That was helpful as well. Much appreciated. And so we find ourselves with a fundraising goal of, $1,965. $1,965. 2 years old that year. But that's how far we have to go to get caught up and pay a bunch of bills to keep this program on the air as we hang on by the last thread of a dry rotted sneaker lace from month to month. But any help is wonderful help. Right now, the outstanding bills are around $1,000, and they are eminently due. We're talking about the telephony and the internet and, well, everything that goes into this being a studio. So that's where we are if anybody wants to help. And thanks so much if you do. What's that? Randy Radar says that yesterday's program was a sleaze fest. Well, you know, we talk about Republicans here, Randy Radar. By definition, it's going to be sleazy. I mean, sleazy and greasy and... ugh. And we've got a little bit of a follow-up, some follow-up sleaze. Remember, what was it, last week we talked about South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem? Kristi Trailer Noem? Kristi No-Tell Motel Noem? Kristi Noem, who was an open secret and open joke for making the ficky fick with brief former nitwit Nero campaign manager Corey Lewandowski. Well, I just happened to go wandering by the subreddit for South Dakota Stan, where I found out that, well, you know, she reacted with such outrage at having her little in flagrante delicto, that's Latin for bedroom, activities with Corey Lewandowski splattered about the press. The waves of righteous indignation coming off her actually bent some light photons as they came toward the earth from the sun. She loves her husband and their children. They've been together for 20 years. They're almost 30 years. It's just another case of the media trying to keep a conservative woman down. Well, it turns out the husband she loves so much moved out of the South Dakota governor's mansion 2 years ago. Where's your hubby, Kristi? How come y'all aren't living together as a one man, one woman, married man and wife, traditional family values, biblical, God-ordained couple, Kristi? So, like I said, just a little sleaze update to get us started on this prayer meeting Wednesday, because of course, Kristi Noem always talks about how much Christian values have shaped her life and her commitment to Jesus Christ. Look at that thing. Never mind. Then there's other things to get into, but. Now, like I said, it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn, and by now, the program 11 minutes old, the deacons are out in the parking lot smoking with the sinners. I keep offering them a nicotine pouch here and there, and they're like, no, I like smoke. I tell you what, I love a smoke after prayer meeting Wednesday. And try not to do it in front of the youngins or anything, but oh, after dinner, you just got to have a cigarette. Deacon's gonna deke, right? And so as a consequence, we'll just they made it. I waved the Cathedral of Common Sense solar powered cattle prod, and it crackled a couple of times, and they got to moving, to thundering and rumbling and stumbling and bumbling. They blew right past me here. They about defrocked me with the wind they generated. It's like watching one of those herds of gnus just lumbering across the African plain. dust everywhere. But they blew past me. They went past the desiccating bowl of Buttermints in the vestibule, grabbed a couple of quick shots of hand sanitizer and downed those just to give them a little fortitude. And they're waiting here down front. And so as a consequence, we will ask the Minister of Music to come forward and lead us in the offertory hymn. Minister of Music, if you would, please.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop. Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, Mersey Dotes and Dozy Dotes and Little Lambsy Dobby, a Kiddly Dobby too. Wouldn't you, brethren and sistren and non-binary siblings, wouldn't you? Ah, calling out to you now, brethren and sistren, to get off of your feet in the seats and get up onto your feet and scrunch and scrunch and wiggle and waggle and waddle and get out there in the aisle and come on down that blood red aisle and fall upon your knees and place your hands upon the subwoofer at the altar and feel the healing rays of common sense flowing through you. Oh, glory, amen. Oh, the rays are beginning to affect me, yes. I am Archpope, Uber, Rabbi, Ultimate Eom, Animated Animist, Antagonized, Agnostic, Vicarious, Vicar, Maximum, Metropolitan, Naughty Nun, Absolutist, Abbess, Robin Roxanne Kincaid, and this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn, amen, glory. And as the deacons continue to pass the plate, the heavy brass-bound burgundy blood-red velvet plates amongst the congregation, thanks go out to George and Coarse Gold, who took us from 1965 down to 1900. Thank you, George. Thank you so much. Hopefully your plate will, the plate that's in will continue to fill up, and we'll have an absolute frenzy of bill paying after the program. It'd be lovely if that could happen. As it stands, if we raise $201, we can stay away from the dreaded $2,000 deficit as we run downhill toward the end of September. Just a reminder, looking at the calendar, there are seven more broadcasts in the month of September. One more prayer meeting Wednesday. So Well, I don't know. Do some of that Oral Roberts seed faith stuff or whatever. But being prayer meeting Wednesday, we will get started with a good story of the religion industry. There is conflict in the Southern Baptist Convention. The Con. That's not the one that goes with it. No, that's the Can. This is the Con. And the Southern Baptist Convention has done vote out a Southern Baptist church in Oklahoma stand, brethren and sistren. It's almost encouraging. It seems like maybe the Southern Baptists might have a molecule of morality about them. Yesterday, the Southern Baptist Con tossed out the Metoka Baptist Church of Ocholata, Oklahoma. Because the preacher there, one Sherman Jaquess, J-A-Q-U-E-S-S, I'm not playing around, he decided to use the Metoka Baptist Church as the platform for his vulgarity and racism. It was back in 2017 that Pastor Jaquess decided to go all blackface on Valentine's Day, because nothing says engage in obvious racism like February the 14th. Excuse me? He put on an Afro fright wig, blacked his face, put on dark glasses, and smiled real big-like as he sang a duet claiming that he was impersonating, you can't make this shit up, Ray Charles. Now, I've seen a lot of videos of Ray Charles' performances over the years. I've never... Did Ray Charles ever wear, taking everything else aside, did Ray Charles ever have a humongous afro? Because I don't remember that being the case. Was he confusing Ray Charles with Stevie Wonder? I think Stevie Wonder had a big afro at one point. Neither here. It's really not part of the calculus, though. It was racism, pure and simple. That was 2017. People only found out about it earlier this year. A community activist in Tulsa named Mark Lewis brought the video forward. And then, where there's smoke, there's a man in a dress. Because the Examiner Enterprise of Bartlesville, Oklahoma, found photos of Pastor Jaquess, man of God, done up in, Rudy Giuliani's in the stack this evening, y'all, so we got that too. Sorry, Randy, the sleaze fest may continue. They're Republicans. But, you know, Rudy Giuliani did that whole man in a dress thing and made kissy face to Nitwit Nero in that video years ago. And so the Examiner Enterprise of Bartlesville found a photo of Pastor Jaquess, whose mission in life is allegedly to share the good news of salvation from the Prince of Peace, Emmanuel. Jesus H. Christ. Well, he was dressed up as a as an indigenous woman for Cowboys and Indians Night at a church camp. The photo shows Pastor Jacquis. We see you, honey. I guess you're valid. No, you're not, because you're engaging in cultural appropriation. But a man dressed as a cowboy is holding a fake gun to Pastor Jacquis in a dress, and a boy dressed as a cowboy is has his fists raised next to him. Well, the bottom line is the Southern Baptist Convention says no, you Metoka Baptists, you can't play in our little reindeer games anymore. And we're coming for the recipe book, and we're taking the recipe book out of your fellowship hall kitchen, and there'll be no more lane cakes for y'all. No, there just won't. Pastor Jacquis, as Mark Lewis put it, didn't just mimic Ray Charles, he distorted the features and culture of African Americans and also indigenous Americans with his offensive Pocahontas caricature. Pocahontas in Oklahoma stand. Who knew? And I thought she died of some loathsome European disease in merry old England. Lewis went on and said he is promoting the hatred that sees African Americans and indigenous Americans as not only different, but less than. Pastor Jacquis, however, insists upon his innocence.
It is repugnant to have people think you're a racist. I was paying tribute to Mr. Ray Charles. If it had been done in a derogatory or hateful manner, that would be one thing, but the church was full of people. Nobody took it as a racial slur.
Here's a hint. If you do racist shit and the people who are around you giggle, those are racists giggling with racist. It's corollary to the old German saying that if you've got if you've got 10 people at a table and one of them's a Nazi and no one says anything to the other to the Nazi, you've actually got 10 Nazis at the table. Same.
Nobody took it as a racial slur.
There's only one problem. Turns out that Pastor Jacquis has been in a moral panic over drag shows in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. But had been in drag around a minor child at church camp. He went on to say that he became a Christian in a Southern Baptist church at the age of 13. And besides that, I wasn't caricaturing Native people. I'm part Cherokee. Every time I see that, I think of my dear friend Matt. He's an indigenous activist. He said, no, just call me an Indian. Y'all named us that centuries ago, and you don't get to rename us. I'm just an Indian. But Matt introduces himself a lot of the times by saying, "Hi, I'm Matt. I'm an Indian. I got some white in me, but I can't prove it. Because, well,
I got some Cherokee in me. I just can't prove it."
Right. But he's mad at the Southern Baptist Convention now, is Pastor Jacquis, who is definitely not a racist and definitely not never engaged in cultural appropriation by dressing in Indian drag? Two-spirit drag? Is that even a thing? Apparently it is. And the Baptist Church of Matoka, Matoka Baptist Church of, where was it again? Of Ocholata, having now been found to not be in friendly compliance by the executive committee of the Southern Baptist Con. Friendly cooperation, I'm sorry. Not in friendly cooperation with the convention. Well, they may appeal the ruling at the full clavern next year. But then added,
I don't know if I want to be part of a denomination that would make a judgment about you without even talking to you. The only thing I see that they do well is cash my check.
Mark Lewis, on the other hand, the man who brought Jacquess's actions to light, said for him to not apologize and double down on it, to me, felt I felt this is a pastor that needed to be exposed. I'm grateful that the Southern Baptist organization said we don't want to have anything to do with this. Well, that's, you know, let's see. Blackface. Indigenous drag. There's only one more. And that's for him to be caught like Ralph Shorty with an underage boy in his mouth. Now, what they used, the Southern Baptist Convention, as the reason for doing this was the fact that friendly cooperation means that it does not, the church does not act to affirm, approve, or endorse discriminatory behavior on the basis of ethnicity. The most recent time they did this, I think, was when they bounced out Brokeback Church in Saddleville, California, or whatever, because they dared to ordain women to preach. Of course, you can also get found to be not in friendly cooperation if you endorse homosexual behavior. You know, and so you definitely don't want to be caught with the man in your mouth. They've been having some problems at the Southern Baptist Con. Their most recent interim president, a gospel sharp from Tennistan named Willie McLaurin, quit this past August because it turned out that he lied. I mean, he's a Southern Baptist preacher. Come on. He lied about his educational accomplishments on his resume. The Southern Baptist Con went on to say that McLaurin engaged in both academic and professional fraud. So they're back to looking for somebody to run the grift. Faith in action. Yes. But that brings me to another preacher. That would be Johnny Hunt, who also ran the Southern Baptist Con until he took a leave of absence 13 years ago. Because back in 2010, July, according to an article from Religion News Service's Bob Smetana, while vacationing in Florida, Hunt had kissed and fondled another pastor's wife in what his attorneys would later call a brief consensual extramarital encounter. And then he spent the next decade or more engaged in a cover-up. Remember, and we can call this Nixon's Law, I think, it's seldom the underlying crime that gets you. It's the cover-up. Meanwhile, being a megachurch preacher, he says, well, it was my private life. And it shouldn't have been exposed. And he's actually, did this Johnny Hunt creep, philanderer, violator of his one man, one woman, God-ordained marriage. Well, he's suing the Southern Baptist Convention now, saying that they and Guidepost Magazine should not have publicly discussed his behavior. Back to the article again. The former SBC president's defamation claim could have some merit if the allegations against him are proven false. But even then, Freeman, Hunt said, Hunt, a prominent evangelical leader and speaker, would likely qualify as a public figure, making the defamation claim harder. The word harder doing a lot of work there. Carrying a lot of freight. Mm-hmm. Oh, the peace that passeth all understanding.
Well, I'm a preacher, so y'all shouldn't be talking about what a perv I am.
And meanwhile, Stephen New York says, I'm part Cherokee. Is it me, or does that sound an awful lot like I've got black friends? Well, it sounds an awful lot like I've got black friends, because it is an awful lot like that, only somebody like Pastor Jacquess would never say, well, I only did it because I'm part black. Because that wouldn't play at all well at the Metoka Baptist Church in Oma Jesus, Oklahoma, or whatever the name of the town is. They might find a new use for the cross there at the church, and it might involve, well, I don't know, gasoline. So that's our religion sleaze, and that's enough. That's a trifecta: Christy Nome and the Metoka Baptist Church, and Johnny Hunt. Now we can get on to the more important stuff. Thank you, Ralphs. Ralphs just jumped in, so we are now down to 1875. As we race to try to get the bills paid. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so much. So, let's see. 276 more, and we managed to avoid the dreaded $2,000 deficit mark for tomorrow, and Lassie can lounge on her doggy bed for another day or so. She's not really lounging. She just can't carry enough rope to reach that far down the well. A little cold down here. I said there would be Rudy. Yeah, and yes, it's gross. It's disgusting. I said there'd be more Rudy news, and there is more Rudy news. Cassidy Hutchinson, remember her? She's the one that dropped the dime on Nitwit Nero and Mark Meadows, I think she's also the one who, she was an assistant to Mark Meadows, Cassidy Hutchinson was, until she quit when she reached the maximum level of her ability to stomach disgusting behavior. But it was in her testimony before the January 6th committee, where she discussed Nitwit Nero going after his Secret Service driver and trying to grab the wheel to go up to the Capitol and coming back into the White House and throwing ketchup? Wasn't that Cassidy? I think so. Well, she's got a new book out. Got her a book contract, and now she's writing a tell-all, and I'm sure, I have no doubt that she's being truthful. And it turns out that on January 6th, just before the attack on the capital of the United States by the domestic terrorists who were organized, directed, and controlled by Julius Geezer, well, Rudy Giuliani, and God, here goes dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Had a snack just before the program, and I'm thinking it wasn't such a great idea now. She described Rudy Giuliani on January 6th as being like a wolf closing in on its prey. He reached his hand under my blazer and then my skirt. I feel his frozen fingers trail up my thigh. He tilts his chin up. The whites of his eyes look jaundiced. My eyes dart to John Eastman, who flashes a leering grin. We've all seen photos of Rudy, and we've seen photos of that disgusting John Eastman, the mugshot in particular. And there's a leering grin. This guy thought himself a legal scholar. Yes. A genius. Cassidy Hutchinson continues, I fight against the tension in my muscles and recoil from Rudy's grip. Filled with rage, I storm through the tent on yet another quest for Mark Meadows. Mark! The excerpts were published at The Guardian today. The Guardian reached out to Rudy Giuliani, but there was no comment. Maybe he was passed out drunk. I don't know. He's becoming something past notorious for his inability to be sober at any given point in the day. The line about him having jaundiced eyes, that's not a good sign. I wonder how long Rudy is for this here mortal coil. Anybody have any problem at all believing this? I read this earlier today and I immediately thought, you know, it's not like Sacha Baron Cohen didn't tell us. The second Borat movie, you remember the cringy moment when Rudy Giuliani lays back on the hotel room bed and reaches into his suit pants, eager at the prospect of having... Oh, God. Yeah, that's enough. Yeah, he's a... Yeah, he's a perv. He's a dangerous perv. He's a sexual predator. Remember, there are already lawsuits against him for his sexual harassment. Kind of wonder if maybe Harvey Weinstein needs a cellmate. Don't you? What's that? Matt in San Francisco says, Pastor Pocahontas. Matt. It's the upgrade from simply being in women's clothes to dressed up as an indigenous American woman that is like the olive in the martini. No fair ruining olives for me. Giuliani, Matt adds, talk about needing a trigger warning. I got to get better at that. You're right.
The martini and the olive. The olive and the martini.
That one hit. I know. Ralph says, oh, my God, gross. Rudy and John? Disgusting. Somebody needs to, I don't know, tell the... Well, I'm so glad. Tamara says, fortunately, I already had my snack, but I did scream out loud at the memory of Rudy on his back, LOL. Unforgettable, you know? Yeah, how... utterly disgusting. But it's who they are. It's just who they are. And by the way, there is a new witness, a new cooperating witness in Fonnie Willis's case against Nitwit Nero. Former lawyer, huge maggot, L. Lynn Wood, has been cooperating with Georgia prosecutors in the racketeering case in Fulton County. We found this out because Fonnie Willis filed a motion seeking to remove as counsel six pettifoggers. Who are representing Trump co-defendants. She says that they all have conflicts of interest. Chris Anulowitz, Amanda Clark Palmer, Scott Grubman, Harry McDougald, Bruce Morris, and Don Samuel, she alleges, are a significant risk to the credibility of the trial. And some of the lawyers have formerly represented Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, former Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, other Georgia politicians. Some have already testified to the grand jury that handed down the indictments of the 19. And some of these pettifoggers represent people like Ray Smith, Jeffrey Clark, Bob Cheeley, and of course, Kenneth, Mr. Rogers with a Xanax problem, cheese bro. And so in the filing seeking their removal, there was a little nugget of information. The state can provide the complaint to the court upon request. L. Lynn Wood, Carrico Jaquan Parrison, Vicki Townsend Concilio, Georgia K. Godwin, James Kenneth Carroll, and Carolyn Hall Fisher are witnesses for the state in the present case. So there's another one who's rolled. Cue up the Rawhide theme. Fonnie Willis went on to say, there's a significant risk that the rules of professional conduct may be violated, which may compromise the rights of certain witnesses for the state of Georgia, should those witnesses be cross-examined by their former attorneys. Further, there is a significant risk that representation of the affected defendants in this matter may be materially affected, which could affect certain rights, including all of the defendants' rights to due process and a fundamentally fair trial. See, she's looking out for the defendants' well-being, too. And then there's the special prosecutor cases. Over on CNN, they had a discussion about Molly Michaels and her disclosure of the fact that Nitwit Nero told her,
"You don't say anything about the boxes. You don't know about the boxes."
And so, here's the audio.
Once again, his great reporting in the Times. This is fascinating. So this is about Trump allegedly telling one of his closest aides, Ms. Michael, basically, "You don't know anything about these boxes." This is talking about the Mar-a-Lago probe, right? Classified documents, et cetera. And that's significant. Let's explain who she is vis-a-vis Trump. I want to play this from Sarah Matthews from the former Trump administration.
So this is someone he knew very well, who would have had a lot of FaceTime with the president, and they can't simply dismiss her, you know, as someone that he would not be aware of or who wouldn't be in the know, because she was quite literally sitting right outside the most important office in the world, someone who the president knew by name, and I think that makes her a very credible witness.
Quote Maggie's reporting, a former assistant to Trump has informed investigators that the former president told her to say she did not know anything about the boxes containing classified documents.
It is a very big deal because she was his gatekeeper. She was his executive assistant. The fact she's speaking to prosecutors and saying that the former president ordered her to deny information during an official inquiry not only speaks to the president's state of mind and apparent sort of obstruction, but for the Trump folks, the calls are coming from inside the House at this point. These are people who can't be dismissed as having partisan access to grind. These are folks who are and were very close to the former president. And that's what happens when sort of the gears of justice start to grind. Some things are beyond politics. And she has credibility because of her proximity. It's going to be tough to demonize.
John Avalon, stick around.
John Avalon sounds right. And you know, you just know this has him in full-on Costco size, industrial strength commercial ketchup bottle mode. It's probably like the prom scene in Carrie. At Bed Monster and or Magalard Ass. Please not unforgettable. No, of course not. No. You're right, Flavio. Flavio, referring to my reference to Borat 2. We owe Maria Bakalova a debt of gratitude. Rudy thought he was going to have sexy time with the Bulgarian actress, but Borat rushes in and says, "She's 13. She's too old for you." Too old for you. We have, if you're at all, there's a hunger. I feel a yearning to see justice done to people like Rudy and Nitwit Nero and all these sleazoids. Maybe it's unreasonable of me. I forget who it was, that said, "Well, you know, Trump will probably never go to jail because he's got Secret Service protection." Addressing a question that we'd been talking about a couple of weeks before because, you know, we're out here on straight road. Uncurved road. And get to questions before a lot of other people do. This one particular individual said, "Well, you know, he'll probably, at best, he'll get an ankle monitor and he'll just have to stay, he'll have to deal with home confinement because there's no way to send the Secret Service to prison." kind of obviating the fact that the Secret Service protection can be withdrawn. And, of course, because he never faces any consequences, because he is Rollo Tomasi, you know, from L.A. Confidential, the guy who always gets away with it, he would manipulate and finagle any sort of house arrest system.
Well, okay, that's fine, but I want to go be house arrested at Margalard Ass. Okay, but I want to go be house arrested at Bed Monster. Could I go be house arrested at my hotel in Kuala Lumpur, please?
It's just, he has to go to prison if convicted, and he has to be convicted. And now, having seen the theory tried and fail, nonetheless, three of the fake electors in the Fulton County case are arguing in court. They did so today that, well, by God, they were performing as federal actors, federal officers, and that they deserved to have their cases removed to federal court so it could be dismissed. David Schaefer, Sean Still, and Kathy Latham. You'll remember Kathy Latham as the white-haired lady with the doe in the headlights look. One of the pettifoggers arguing before Federal District Judge Stephen C. Jones said,
by federal law, these people were not fake, sham, or impersonating electors. They were contingent electors when they did their duty on December 14th, 2020.
Saying that they were contingent, that word, contingent, that is the very heart and soul of pettifogging.
Well, I mean, they're not fake or false, they're contingent. Just like my fee. Well, I got this for cash, but like when I do car wrecks, I don't get paid unless I get money from my clients, and that's a contingent fee. It's not a real fee. I mean, it's a real fee, see, but it's contingent.
Hopefully Judge Jones will laugh them out of court. Bonnie Willis said, no. They weren't electors at all. They had no basis for making the claim. Their claim was fraudulent, and they did so to try to keep people's votes from being counted. Yeah, meanwhile, the Georgia Republicans, a three-member panel, have decided that the defendant Still will not be suspended from the legislature.
Because he weren't in office when the alleged offenses occurred. And it don't therefore pertain to an abuse of legislative power.
They would bounce a similarly situated Democrat out on her ass before the petition was even filed. One day, says Darlene, one day. A woman being assaulted is just going to haul off and punch the living shit out of Giuliani and others like him. Take sticks and clubs to him like those ladies did in, what was it, India? And that one woman in a burqa did in some Muslim nation and just beat the living goddamn shit out of these man pigs? Freaking sick and tired of hearing the same story repeating and repeating. So much for equality. Triggered? Says Darlene, just a little. And meanwhile, as to Cassidy Hutchinson, Darlene says, sadly, Cassidy needs to check her own damn priorities at the door. She testified to the J6 committee that the Trump administration was doing great things and how disappointing this all was with January 6th. Really? Really? What great things, Cass? Come on, get a grip. Kind of like all those other sheeple saying they'll still vote for Trump if he's the nominee again for president. Bunch of fools. Are they fools, Darlene? Or are they just loyal maggots? Are they just fascists who want a fascist dictatorship? I don't think I'm willing to give them the grace of saying that they are merely fools. These are all classic examples of Fields Commandment number one. You cannot cheat an honest man. These were not honest actors who were simply caught up in a venal criminal enterprise. These were active participants in it. And while I respect Cassidy Hutchinson for finally telling the truth, emphasis on the word finally, at one point in time, you're right. She thought this was going to rocket her career into the Republican stratosphere. When it turned out that the only way she could even remotely save it from being buried in the center of the earth was by finally telling the damn truth. Which is not exactly a stirring endorsement. But here we are. Ralph's asked, would Donnie then get solitary confinement? Solitary is usually used as punishment, but I'm sure he would be housed alone somehow or another. Question is where? My favorite location is the Supermax in Florence, Colorado, but, you know, he was, as misinformed multimillionaire for-profit media talking heads say, the commander-in-chief. I heard that yesterday when President Biden was about to address the United Nations General Assembly, and some babbling bobblehead said, and now the commander-in-chief of the United States is about to speak to the UN. No! No, the president of the United States was about to speak. The Constitution is clear in its language about the commander-in-chief. But, you know, maybe commander-in-chief could go to Leavenworth. He wouldn't need a sledgehammer to make big rock, little rocks out of big rocks. He could just sit on them. Oh, that was tacky. But, like Darlene said, one day, if there is a molecule of justice in this world, perhaps we will get to see doors slam shut behind him. And
by the way, police officers, when you're putting him in the car, don't be so gentle this time. It's okay if you want to bump their head on the roof of the car.
And going back to a story yesterday, yes, today in federal court in D.C., Ray Epps went into court and entered a guilty plea to misdemeanor disorderly conduct with the intent to disrupt a government proceeding. You may recall the story from yesterday's program about how the goober over at Alex Jones's joint said that they were only doing it because so much hell had been raised and he had been convicted. Yeah, he was convicted. Didn't he go to trial, the InfoWars creep? We have crossed into the second hour of the program. This is Conversation Radio, you know. If you've got something on your mind, feel like chatting, well, both lines are open. The Skype line, Robin, Kincaid Horn, KincaidHorn, Robin is R-O-B-Y-N. That'll get you into the program. As will the Stress Line, named for the immortal Bill Mr. Stress Miller. 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And so, having turned the corner into the second hour, we are at 1875 for fundraising and need to take that down, if at all possible. You know, when I talk about bill paying, I'm not kidding. This isn't about vacations or large, lavish living. This is a radio program that originates with working folks. Working folks support it, and a working folks delivers it. So, you know, no need to worry about lavish road trips or no. I mean, at this point in time, I don't think I could even afford to go to the Ravenswood jerk-off. Jesus. Wouldn't want to run into Lauren Boebert anyway. Speaking of whom, you know, this will all go away eventually. The name of the bar that was owned by the guy who took Lore on a date, it's called the Hooch Craft Cocktail Bar. Yelp had to disable reviews on the bar because it was buried under a tsunami of negative reviews. And so Yelp disabled it on unusual activity alert. Before it got shut down, though, there were some gems. Been there often, won't be back. The owner has disreputable friends. And Quinn Gallagher is disruptive and disrespectful in public places. Now, don't y'all put him out of business. He hosts drag shows. Another individual wrote on the Yelp page for Hooch. The owner's doinking 36-year-old Grandma Boebert, who supported an insurrection against America. A cowbell to that anonymous individual for doinking 36-year-old Grandma Boebert. This place sucks unless you admire an owner that dates Boebert and causes a ruckus at a theater play. Along the way, and thank you, Sylvie. Along the way, I had a message from Sylvie. I said, low rent bobblehead Boebert is a name you could use for her. Thank you, Sylvie. Well, low-rent bobblehead Boebert said Sunday, I was a little too eccentric. Ah, you're a little too wasted, girl. Grandma. Over at Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground, giving an interview on Sunday, she said, I'm known for having an animated personality, maybe overtly animated personality. Yeah, it was overt, all right. I was laughing. I was singing, having a fantastic time. I was higher than Jesus at the top of Mount Everest. No, I added that part. Overtly animated. Eccentric, yes. Oh, honey. You're just WT. You're just Whiskey Tango. Hey, thank you, Christopher. Doing what you can. Thank you so much. You just did a lot. And so we're down to 1870. Thank you so much, Christopher. Christopher reached out via Venmo. I think my account name is, it's still one of those instances where I can't quite get shed of, you know, him. Bob. What is it? Venmo? Yeah. At Bob-Kincaid-1. But there is a picture of Robin there, so you can be sure that you know that it's me. Bobert Date, Matt in San Francisco, says, I feel bad for the guy. I mean, who among us hasn't had the one date where after a hand job in public, we haven't said to ourselves, maybe I do have a drinking problem. Oh, Matt. You're bringing the A material tonight. You really are. After a hand job in public, we haven't said to ourselves, maybe I do have a drinking problem.
Well, let him who has gotten a gratuitous in a darkened theater cast the first stone. It's Wednesday, okay?
I love that joke, you know. Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of their life, is standing there, and a woman's been taken in adultery, and they want to beat her to death with rocks. And Yeshua looks up and says, let that person who is without sin cast the first stone. This is a Catholic joke. Let that person who is without sin cast the first stone. And all of a sudden, a rock comes roaring up out of the back of the crowd, just crunks Jesus right on the noggin. You know, scalp wounds are bloody, nasty, messy, and the blood's running down into his eyes, and he peers into the back of the crowd and says, honestly, Mom, sometimes you really piss me off. It's a Catholic joke. Mary was without sin. It's a good one. It's not an anti-Catholic joke. It just depends on it depends on Catholic dogma and theology. Honestly, Mom, sometimes you really piss me off. Yeah, I wonder if Laura will protest the next drag show there at Hooch. Or will she compete? She could be a petite little drag king. Maybe I do have a drinking problem. That's that revelatory moment that leads to step one, isn't it, Matt? What is it? I realized I was powerless over alcohol and my life had become unmanageable. I mean, doinking 36-year-old Grandma Bobert. And since let's check in with American Hero. 6-foot-9-inch tall American Hero, Senator John Fetterman of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. You will recall that he responded to them by saying, well, I figure if I start vaping and grabbing the hog in a darkened theater, they'll make me a folk hero. God, he's badass. Well, he issued a press release today. And he's just getting awesomer. In his press release, the end of civility. In his press release, Senator Fetterman said, brinksmanship, Fetterman to GOP, if you don't shut down the government, I'll wear a suit next week. Pennsylvania, Dateline, Washington, D.C., Pennsylvania, U.S. Senator John Fetterman on Wednesday released the following statement on the Senate dress code. If those jagoffs in the House, if those jagoffs in the House stop trying to shut our government down and fully support Ukraine, then I'll save democracy by wearing a suit on the Senate floor next week. The only thing it's missing is the hashtag fuckwits. God, that's beautiful. Please, can we have more John Fettermans? Someone remarking, he may not be the hero we deserve, but Fetterman is clearly the hero we need. Another individual saying, I endorse the use of the term jagoffs in an official statement from a U.S. senator. And another person pointed out, jagoff, such a wonderful Western PA Pittsburgh slur. And it is. That's the first thing I thought when I saw jagoff. I was like, oh, I didn't know that John Fetterman was a yinzer. You bunch of jagoffs want to go down to John Eagle? Then we can go to Eaton Park and get some gravy fries. Yins. Yins jagoffs. So much respect for him for punching a bully in the face. And he's wonderful. Not that you really have to be warned, because I don't know that you could necessarily get in one, but Senator Fetterman, stay off small aircraft, please. I mean, good God, he's one sick burn, as the kids like to say. He's one sick burn after another. Ron Monkey Up DeClantis criticized him. As if Ron Monkey Up DeClantis has anything to criticize anybody about, you know, go-go boots Ronnie. With people like Marginal Trailer Queen saying, the Senate is no longer enforcing a dress code for senators to appease Fetterman. It's disgraceful, Marge said. Dress code is one of society's standards that set etiquette and respect for our institutions. Stop lowering the bar. You know what another standards? Yeah, not attacking another member of Congress for having a trans child, Marge. Then there was Greg Gutfeld at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, who said, women know how to dress. They enjoy looking good. Men enjoy looking comfortable. Dudes should stick to the suits. With the exception of Miss Lindsay, I don't think anybody's going to show up to the Senate in a ball gown, not even Kyrsten Sinema.
This isn't a poker game or a strip club. It's not going for lunch at the Cheesecake Factory. We've had a decline of standards and everything.
I'm surprised they haven't gotten around to blaming John Kennedy for not wearing a fedora to his inauguration in 1961.
That was the end of fine haberdashery for men.
Dana Perineal was right there with Greg Gutfeld and said, you know, this happened in the fall of the Roman Empire. They let people wear togas everywhere. Next thing you know, no empire. They think they're humorous. Uncorking an entire Jeroboam of paranoia, Maria Bartiromo asked U.S. Senator Bill Hagerty of Tennessee, the junior senator, he's junior behind Marsha Triple X Blackburn, is there a cover-up underway? No, really. Not kidding.
Well, Senator, real quick before you go, there's also the cover-up underway. I mean, you know, like, for example, this casual new thing in the Senate, that you all are okay to wear, you know, casual clothing. You no longer need a jacket and tie. Was that because of John Fetterman and he wants to wear and he likes to wear his hoodies? Is that the reason that Chuck Schumer made that change?
You know, Chuck Schumer certainly didn't consult with me before he made this change. I think it's just another step in the movement by the Democrats to, quote, transform America, to take us to a different place, and to take us to a place that is much less respectful than we historically have been. The United States Senate is the world's most important deliberative body, and to see it completely...
It sincerely is not, Bill Hagerty. but I think he just fucked up by suggesting that the Democrats are trying to transform society by letting people wear more casual clothing on the Senate floor. I may want a cowbell for this. Didn't Bill Hagerty just suggest that Democrats are anti-groomers?
I'll be showing up wearing their hoodies and their sweatpants and not properly combing their hair and maybe not shaving for weeks and looking like goddamned hippies.
That sounds like you're the anti-groomer.
Completely downgraded. No dress code now. I just think it's another step in the wrong direction.
Well, honey, put on a banana hammock and go into the Senate. You do you. No, Flavio, I said Dana Perineal, not perineum. It's an adjective, not a noun. I use the adjectival form. But the best part of all of this was that was when Ron Monkey Up Go-Go Boots DeKlantis told the two or three supporters who show up for him, please clap. It's a Florida thing.
Well, Senator Fetterman has a lot of problems. Let's just
be honest. Like how he got elected. Well, I mean, he got elected because they didn't want the alternative, who, by the way, was a wild-eyed maggot. But he wears, like, sweatshirts and hoodies and shorts, and that's his thing. So he would campaign in that. We need to be lifting up our standards, not dumbing down our standards. That's when John Fetterman just said, yeah, you know, I dress like he campaigns. Jesus, it's not even a fair fight, is it? I know maybe it marks me as being a bit vacuous, but I love having a Democrat out there who will channel his inner Harry Truman.
Give him hell, Harry.
Oh, I don't give him hell. I just give him the truth, and they think it's hell. Tan suits! I mean, Hoodie Gate is exposing... You know, they can't govern. They can't come up with legislative solutions. They spend all their time barking and grunting about a ninth grade girl running cross country. But these morons, Monday, I know. These good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republicans, Wednesday. They're making themselves even stupider. There are people in America, there are maggots who cannot afford nor would know where to even go shopping for a suit. Okay? I mean, to a certain extent, it is a different America. I don't get thrown into a dysphoric spiral by talking about the before time. And there was a before time. And not just mine. In my little town in Alabama, there was a men's store called Otto Speak. S-P-E-A-K-E. They sold suits, casual wear, whatnot. And the minute you walked in the door, it was, hello, Mr. So-and-so. Hello, Mr. So-and-so. Oh, my God, yes. What can we do for you, Mr. So-and-so? And they would have a book with your measurements in them, so that the salesman could then go about the business of, and he would know what your style and your taste were. That's all gone. It's an American. I mean, maybe it still exists for the people with seven-digit incomes, but you kind of have to, you know. The rise of cheap retail did that in long before the malls died. And I was there to witness its end. And so there's an element of truth in that. But it is not the collapse of civilization. It is the free market at work, their beloved free market. There was a place in Charleston generations ago called Frankenburgers. Once coal miners rose to an economic status where they could actually be treated like human beings instead of bank mules by the company, and the company actually had to pay them for their labor and for taking away their ability to breathe air. My grandfather was one such man. Get on the train here, take it down to Charleston, go on to Capitol Street, go into Frankenburgers, and be treated with dignity and respect and outfitted with a suit of clothes and a fine hat and a nice silk tie. It's a gone America. It's not coming back. So in the midst of all of this fulmination, you get Eric Erickson, who has actually been treated as if he is not just crazier than a sprayed roach and been gotten onto otherwise respectable media outlets for... He ran Red State or whatever. And had a full-on conniption. I mean, I've told the story about how early-ish in his career at the University of Alabama, Coach Nick Saban, upon his team having its ass handed to him by the University of Louisiana, I don't know, busted knuckle, at his post-game press conference compared that loss to 9/11 and Pearl Harbor. No, really, it was just a football game, coach. Well, here we have the 2023 version. Eric Erickson writing, Dems who were outraged by January 6th rioters storming the Capitol because of the violence wrought against that great temple of democracy are okay with a man at war with the English language and pants getting to wear a hoodie and shorts onto the Senate floor. At war with the English language and pants. Just no bison helmets. Oh, Eric Erickson, go outside and touch grass. You need to get out more, Eric, who is not exactly, if you bother to go and look, and really you don't need to, who is not exactly a Cary Grant-esque fashion plate. Former U.S. Assistant Attorney, Assistant U.S. Attorney Richard Signorelli said, called it an insane false equivalence. Former teabag Congressman Joe Walsh of Illinois This is a really bad tweet. Another former prosecutor said, this is an incredibly stupid thing to say. Well, it was. It was an incredibly stupid thing to say because, well, Eric Erickson is incredibly stupid. Just like the rest of the maggots. Yeah, because John Fetterman's clothing, John Fetterman's attire, is clearly equivalent to maggots smearing poop on the walls of the Capitol of the United States. Jesus Christ, you'd think it was Attila the Hun setting fire to Rome. I don't know, at some point, one of these maggots will probably ask to borrow the gallows that the maggots brought to Capitol Hill to hang Mike Pence. It's frustrating. It's maddening. This is what they have time for. This is who they are. And by extension, this is a reflection of the people who send the maggots to office. Emery and Marvelline sitting there in their matching Barca loungers out in their trailer at the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Park and Country Club, bleating to each other about the decline in America. Actually, the fact of the matter is, John Fetterman looks like democracy. John Fetterman looks and talks like America looks and talks, except for the 6'9" part. He's a little above average there. I wonder how long this conniption's going to last. Flavio says, let a thousand Fettermans bloom, and I will never again complain about Democrats being a pusillanimous lot and not playing Smash Mouth football. He's friggin' awesome. Yes, he is. And whip smart, too. In this scenario, he's the seasoned veteran comedian, and the maggots are the pathetic drunk hecklers. And then there's the man with the largest head in the world, Charlie Kirk of Toilet Paper USA, TP USA. Last night, he did an appearance at Northern Arizona University, and the Daily Beast said that he received a rousing welcome. He was there for something called Prove Me Wrong, The Government is Lying to You. And he was met with a host of Gen Z protesters. Remember, TPUSA was founded as a young conservative movement. The young conservatives can circle the wagon, but they are, in fact, encircled in their own right. They're surrounded and vastly outnumbered. And so this was what went down at Northern Arizona University. Now see, them vulgar youngins is what you get when people get to wear hoodies into the United States Senate. The dipshit actually set up a booth to debate with students, and the students said, no, fuck you, fascist. And, they screamed at the ugly little Nazi, and they brought bullhorns. And yay, I don't know what the mascot of the Northern Arizona University is, but I'm a fan. They even brought a brass band. No, that's the can-can, not the brass band. I can't help but be impressed and have hope for the future. Yes. Yes, Ralphs, they were saying, fuck you, fascist, fuck you, fascist, fuck you, fascist, and get the fuck out of here, fascist, fuck off. Some were yelling, Charlie Kirk has a small face. Charlie K is a piss baby. I've never heard that one before, but it certainly seems to fit. There are even people yelling, trans rights equal human rights. That was on a sign. Meanwhile, the stupidest man on the internet actually put that video out. I'm talking about Jack Posobiec, who said, Charlie Kirk laughs as mob of smelly, overweight SJWs scream, fuck you, fascist, fuck you, fascist. Northern Arizona University, 2023 AD. What's he supposed to do? Well, what he does is he kept it together until he got back to his hotel room so he could bury his face in his pillow and cry. Love me some anti-fascists. All those people in those holes in the ground with the crosses and stars of David over them in Normandy would be proud of you. Good. Give, like I said, gives me hope. And now a little, because we are at the halfway mark of the program, a little past it. What's that, Matt? Food for thought. Matt says, I'm not sure how I feel about people reacting to Fetterman and opposed to Kyrsten Sinema. I think it's about the difference in what they stand for. It's one thing to be dressed funny while fighting for everyday Americans and opposed to being dressed funny while voting down a minimum wage hike. Still feels a little misogyny-like. Might be, Matt. But the fact of the matter is, well, you might be right. But I still feel like the Britney Spears cosplay costume and the thumbs down and the curtsy, which were, you know, she's a senator from Arizona, and that was a direct slur on her predecessor in office, John McCain, who refused to take health care away from American citizens. I always get a little bit leery when talking about how women dress, because it's always it is in fact so problematic. But then again, what do you say about Susan Collins declaring,
well, I'll wear a bikini to the floor of the Senate.
Okay, Sue. You do you. Tommy the Tuber. Chuck Schumer is going to give Tommy the Tuber his way. having blocked over 300 promotions that are usually pro forma in the Senate of the United States because the Senate's rules are that screwed up. Tommy the Tuber shifted his argument and said,
well, no, I just want to vote on all these people one by one, not in a group.
That was never what he said. It's evolving madness, evolving bigotry, evolving misogyny. Well, on the floor of the Senate today, Schumer said, we'll be confronting his obstruction head on. But it's not the path the vast majority of senators on either side of the aisle want to go down. But we'll start voting one by one and drag into Saturday, first tackling the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Marine Corps Commandant, and the Army Chief of Staff. I cannot believe we are going to hand Tommy Tuberville, or that Chuck Schumer is going to hand Tommy Tuber this victory. It's embarrassing, frankly. But then again, I could not help wondering when I first saw this story, you know, and there was Vote Vets, what, 2 days ago? Yesterday, maybe, planting 300 signs on the Senate lawn with the name of each person being held up by Tommy the Tuber. And Chuck Schumer caved. When I saw the news earlier today, it was specifically mentioning the Commandant of the Marine Corps, because they haven't had a commandant, and it's the first time since, like, 1909. Over 100 years for anybody ciphering challenged like me. And the first thing that popped into my mind was, gee, I wonder if this is because of that $80 million jet, pieces of which they finally found scattered all over a significant portion of South Carolina, Stan. Is there some way to spin this into a victory? Apparently Chuck is trying. But I don't know what confronting his obstruction head-on means to Chuck Schumer. But there we are. And out of the court system, this. Showing that there are rules in the federal judiciary. This story highlights the profound ethical differences between the Supreme Court of the United States and the lower courts, including the courts of appeal. By a vote of judges on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, the judges in question prohibited appeals court judge Pauline Newman from hearing cases for more than a year. And they said she would be so prohibited until she agreed to medical testing. So far, she has said no. Staffers in the Federal Circuit have said that Pauline Newman goes on paranoid and angry rants, claims that the court has bugged her phone, tried to get one of her former staffers arrested. She has sued her other judges in an effort to stop the inquiry into her mental status. Her lawyer said that this action was taken only in a bid to keep her off the bench via the exercise of raw power. It is not lost on me that Pauline Newman is a woman. But then again, she is 96 years old. And I don't know, maybe she's the last in the country. She is an appointee of old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan. The judges who ruled were unanimous in their ruling. The counsel judging her said, "We are acutely aware that this is not a fitting capstone to Judge Newman's exemplary and storied career. But in the hearing, they dealt with two expert opinions from physicians." Actually, no, she put forward the two expert opinions. Her pettifogger said that the council was ignoring data or information or opinions that are inconsistent with its predetermined goals and outcomes. The federal circuit is largely focused on issues of patent. And Newman was respected as a patent law judge. And she has been in her career a prominent dissenter from patent cases. Federal Circuit Chief Judge Kimberly Moore back in April said Pauline Newman showed signs of cognitive and physical impairment, and said that she refuses to cooperate with inquiries into her mental health. And so, you know, looking at her bio, she has a lengthy career, having been born in 1927. So, this isn't abundantly clear. They're pointing out professor, David Hurchik of Mercer University, said, "I saw Judge Newman with Judge Lurie and former Judge O'Malley speak at the USPTO 3 weeks ago. I was there speaking on patent ethics. Judge Newman was eloquent, coherent, cogent, and spoke passionately about various topics, including Section 101, of which I know nothing, which requires a bit of mental agility, I would say." I wonder which way she tends to dissent in patent cases. Her bio says, "At the core of Judge Newman's dissenting jurisprudence is the premise that the sovereign, as a contracting party, should be accountable for its actions, subject only to limited exceptions, not to be presumed unnecessarily expanded or imposed in a formalistic doctrinaire way
that ignores or masks the facts of government conduct. Where the facts justify it, contractors should be entitled to a fair and just remedy, and the Federal Circuit is there to make sure this happens. She dissented in something called Ariosa versus Sequinon and took issue with the Federal Circuit's, and that was 2015, took issue with the Federal Circuit's position on patent-eligible subject matter. Claims preempting the use of the laws of nature. Following a SCOTUS decision in Mayo Collaborative Services versus Prometheus Laboratories. Patent, of course, is inherently intertwined with ideas of capitalism. And that case, Mayo Collaborative Services versus Prometheus Laboratories, involved what is described as requiring additional inventive concepts to transform a newly discovered law of nature into a patentable claim. That's fascinating. Newman maintains that claims limited to a small number of routine applications and new discoveries should be allowed because such claims do not preempt further study of this science nor the development of additional applications. Apparently that's the Section 101 stuff. But again, like I said, it does point out that there are means by which courts can manage the bench as long as it isn't the Supreme Court of the United States. They, on the other hand, get a pass. And that's where we get into trouble. Okay, that was fun. Actually, I find that incredibly interesting. And the dichotomy with the Supreme Court of the United States, in which you can be as crooked as a dog's hind leg, like Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Fappy Thomas, Sammy Bad Breath Alito, Anne's boy Neil Gorsuch, The Handmaid, Brat Kavanaugh, Old Balls and Strikes, basically all of them on the right wing of the court, and no one can do a goddamn thing about it. I wonder if that's, you know, in the long run, I wonder if that's even a bug. I wonder if it's more like a feature. And now it's time we turn our attention to what happened in the House today. in the House Judiciary Committee. Attorney General Merrick Garland showed up to testify, and it was, in a word, nasty. And it got to the point where Adam Schiff, who is by far and away the intellectual superior to House Judiciary Chairman Jim Jacketoff Jordan, who, as Fonnie Willis has reminded us, is the member of no bar whatsoever, and Schiff just unloaded on Jacketoff. He didn't call him a jagoff or anything, but still, Adam Schiff took Jacketoff to the woodshed.
Today, at a momentous time in our history, the country is about to go through a great trial. By this, I do not mean any of the several trials of the former president, but rather a trial of the proposition that we are a nation of laws, committed to the rule of law, and that no one is above the law. It is a proposition well known around the world because it is the one essential ingredient in all democracies. We have all professed our belief in this principle, but it has never been truly tested, not like it is today. In this committee, we are engaged in a portion of that trial. The chairman would abuse the power of this committee by trying to interfere in the prosecutions of Donald Trump, by trying to use the committee's power of subpoena to compel criminal discovery, in effect, making the committee a kind of criminal defense firm for the former president. In doing so, the chairman of this committee would establish a very different proposition. Through Mr. Jordan's actions, he would establish the principle that the rule of law should apply to almost everyone, just not the leader of his party. According to this alternate proposition, if you were the president of the United States and you lose your reelection, you can violate the law and constitution to try to stay in power, and if you are successful, well, then maybe you get to be president for life. And if you fail, there is no repercussion. This proposition is also well known to the world, and it is called dictatorship. Mr. Jordan hopes to camouflage his assault on the rule of law by falsely claiming that Donald Trump is the victim of unequal justice and Hunter Biden its beneficiary. It is a claim as transparently political as it is devoid of any factual basis. And it is cynical, based on the belief that the American people cannot discern fact from fiction. But I am betting on America. History has shown that those who bet against her are rarely successful, and more often they end up covered with shame. I believe in the rule of law, and I thank you, Mr. Attorney General, for defending it.
Good. Well said. And Jim Jacketoff Jordan is, in fact, a pettifogging, no good, rotten, corrupt, lickspittle, possible insurrectionist in his own right, Renfield to nitwit Nero's Dracula. But that was about as civil as it got. It got ugly. To wit. Now, here we are.
Her.
We'll have to deal with the sleazy Republican attack ad from Virginia. They see, apparently, my IP thinks I'm in Virginia and not West Virginia. That's okay. They probably got an aunt in Roanoke, right? Naturally, the perpetrator of the ugliness was the giant, the big giant forehead Matt, it just gets worse. Warning. This isn't a hockey puck warning. It's more like get the trash can because this is disgusting.
Whose count of the number of paid informants on January 6th?
Let me answer your question about China.
I want you to answer this question. I only get 5 minutes. You've already screwed the pooch on China. So January 6th, did you lose count of the number of federal assets? Did you lose count and order an audit?
Gentlemen, his time has expired.
I get an answer to the question of did they lose
count? No, you don't.
Let him answer the question.
The time has expired. The Attorney General can respond.
China is the most aggressive, most dangerous adversary
the United States
faces, and we are doing everything within our power to rebut that, to stop that, to prevent their invasions, both kinetic, and through cyberspace. And we will continue
gave that answer in your courtroom when you were a judge, you would tell them they were being non-responsive, and you would direct them to answer the question.
Point of order, Your Honor.
Time is
adjuring the witness.
Time has expired.
I got it.
Like Your Honor? You want to stick with that?
Yeah, I was getting laughed at to call me Your Honor.
Point of order either way.
Okay, I understand that too.
All right.
But the gentleman asked his question. Before his time expired, the Attorney General did not respond to the gentleman's question. I was hoping he would respond to the question about the confidential human sources on January 6th. He didn't respond to that. I'm sure we're going to get an answer to that later.
Of course,
now,
Mr. Chairman, there were questions before that that he was not given a chance to answer.
Understand,
so
but
the witness might have thought.
But the witness doesn't, Mr. Chairman, point of order. The witness does not control the time.
Hang on. Exactly right. Members control.
The whiny little pissant is, of course, who was speaking there, is, of course, Jim Jackadoff Jordan, who couldn't run, who couldn't preside over a goddamn game of checkers without engaging in some level of corruption.
All the time, if they want to switch their question and focus on one more question that they'd like an answer to, I want to give the witness a chance to respond to that final question that Mr. Gates asked. He didn't respond to it. Someone else is going to ask it, I'm sure. We now recognize the gentleman from Tennessee for 5 minutes.
Thank you, sir. I'll just follow up a few of the questions we were asked here. Did Devin Archer...
Devin Archer. God, what an embarrassment. But then again, this is the government that the maggots said they wanted. You know, with some fuckery and screwing up by folks like, what was his name? The congressman from New York who helped make this happen. Mahoney, yeah, something like that. Meanwhile, of course, Matt, it just gets worse, went to whine. Well, no, let's stay with the hearing for the moment. Because at one point in time, Merrick Garland, for all of his meek and mild, Merrick Garland took apart piece by piece a maggot congressman named Jeff Van Dorn of New Jersey. Van Drew. Over claims that the Attorney General's office is targeting people for their faith. Weaponizing the federal government against people for their faith. It didn't play well.
The actions of the DOJ are on you. The decline of Americans' trust in our federal law enforcement is on you. The political weaponization of the DOJ is on you. Attorney General, I need a simple yes or no to the following. Just yes or no, because we don't have much time. Do you agree that traditional Catholics are violent extremists? Yes or no?
Let me answer what you've said in that long list of I'll be happy to answer all of those.
Attorney General, I control the time. I'm going to ask you to answer the questions I asked.
You controlled time by asking me a substantial number of things. And
I didn't ask you those things. I made a statement. Attorney General, through the chair, I ask you, do you agree that traditional Catholics are violent extremists?
I have no idea what the traditional means here.
Catholics that go to church.
May I answer your question?
Yes,
the idea that someone with my family background would discriminate against any religion is so outrageous, so absurd.
Mr. Attorney General, it was your FBI question. That did this. It was your FBI that was sending, and we have the memos, we have the emails, we're sending undercover agents into Catholic churches.
Both I and the director of the FBI have said that we were appalled. Have said that we were appalled by that memo.
So then you agree that they're not extremists?
We were appalled by that memo.
Are they extremists or not, Attorney General?
I think that...
Are they extremists or not, Attorney General?
Everything in that memo is appalling.
Are they extremists or not? I'm asking a simple question. Say no if you think that was wrong.
Catholics are not extremists. No.
Except when they are. I'll say what the Attorney General wouldn't. This is, after all, Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Every follower of a religion who seeks to use that religion as a cudgel to deny rights to other Americans, yes, they are extremists. Every fetus, fetishist, Roman Catholic, Southern Baptist, Presbyterian, Lutheran, whatever, that seeks to take away another person's right to bodily autonomy is, by God, an extremist. And let me see the extremism challenge and raise it by un-American. That phrase has been bandied about and used as a weapon against people who would dare criticize the various and sundry evils that this country has perpetrated over its history. Oh, that's un-American. By God, what's un-American is using your faith in your invisible friend to say that someone else has less rights than you do. Because see, a wealthy, white, cisgender, heterosexual, Roman Catholic or Southern Baptist or Methodist, or Presbyterian, or Lutheran, or Church of Christer, or Free Will Baptist, or Pentecostalist, or Assemblies of God, or Seventh-day Adventist, any of those who have sufficient wealth and privilege, when one of them gets pregnant and doesn't want it, they'll have no problem going to a civilized state and dealing with the matter of their conscience and their choice. Texas is trying, as we discussed on this program, Texas is trying to limit the ability of people to use the highways of Texas, the federal interstate highway system, to get out of Texas and into New Mexico. But that's because those are people who have to drive. For wealthy white women in Texas who can simply get on a plane and jet off to California,
have a nice little shopping weekend before she goes in to take care of her little problem. Or daddy's little problem, likely as not. Well, that's okay. And they can come back home and scream about the baby murderers and drink some sacramental Pinot Noir and say, hey, Jesus, forgive me for murdering my baby.
Okay.
Yeah, they're extremists. Of course they're extremists. They bomb women's reproductive health care centers. They murder, in the name of Jesus, doctors who provide reproductive health care. Don't they? Yes, they do. And I don't know what else to call it but extremism. Yeah, I do. I have a much more narrowly tailored word for them. And it's a word which has been used accurately in the past. Fascists. In Mussolini's Italy, the fascists leveraged the Roman Catholic Church to great effect. And it's not debatable. Germany did the same. Not debatable. I wish to God we could talk about the degree to which fascism, yeah, and by say we could talk, I mean have a national conversation with inside communities much larger than ours here. We don't have a problem understanding this. Vice News has a report out talking about the rise in straight-up Nazi activity in this country over the past few years, and it is shocking and terrifying. And it is terrifying primarily because nothing will be done. Because we don't want to talk about it. And we prefer to just close our eyes and step on the gas. Flavio says, I wish Merrick Garland had not been so meek. Garland is not Fetterman after all, but I had wanted more from Garland. I listened to the proceedings on my laptop and I was horrified by the number of fascists in the cringeness Congress. So many from my state of Wisconsin, it was vomitable. Derek Van Orden. His indigenous name is Screams at Children. Cusses at Children. And this thing today was an embarrassing zoo. So naturally, we have another clip. From Matt, it just gets worse. This one, mercifully, is shorter. Matt Gaetz, who has, it's not apparently, Matt Gaetz, who has no idea how government works, had a favor to ask of Attorney General Garland.
Yes, I'm just wondering, Mr. Attorney General, has anyone at the department told President Biden to knock it off with Hunter? I mean, you guys are charging Hunter Biden on some crimes, investigating him on others. You've got the president bringing Hunter Biden around to state dinners. Has anyone told him to knock it off?
Our job in the Justice Department is to pursue our cases without reference to what's happening in the outside world.
Just yes or no. Have you done that?
That is what we do.
So it's a no?
No one that I know of has spoken to the White House about the Hunter Biden case.
I'm wondering that.
And I have to presume, and I know that's dangerous, I have to presume that, Matt, it just gets worse. No, it would be a wrong presumption. Matt Gaetz liked the Department of Justice under his orange god emperor Tangerine Tiberius. He likes a Department of Justice that is, in fact, weaponized to pursue political enemies. Because, once again, this entire weaponization of the Department of Justice is just projection and confession. Every blessed time it is. Truth. And Matt would, in San Francisco, would know something about this. Merrick Garland, making him appear at the hearing seems like he has a case for creating a hostile work environment. But you know what? Give him credit for this. Merrick Garland was unafraid. Merrick Garland showed up. Merrick Garland was not a little pants-pissing asswipe who refused to show up like the chairman of that committee did. So there's that. And he wants the DOJ. To tell the president that Hunter Biden can't come to state dinners. How many state dinners? When? Yeah, even though it would be illegal as fuck for the DOJ to do any such thing. One individual responding to this stupidity said, "This is why impeachment is a loser for the Republicans. Attacking a father who's buried two children to abandon a third child is something most Americans will find repugnant, regardless of Hunter's crimes, and our Republicans will look heartless rather than judicially minded." Well, they are. Another individual said, "Gaetz seems to believe the DOJ is the president's attorney." Well, there's reason why. Nitwit Nero thought that too. Believed, not thought. Garland correctly understands that this is not DOJ's role and further understands that DOJ doesn't exist to tell a president how to parent. Bang. Mic drop. But it's not like they're going to change. The only way to make them change is to throw them out. And in order to throw them out, congressional districts have to be fairly drawn so that there is a meaningful chance to throw them out. And where the House of Representatives is concerned, gerrymandering is the only way that the Republican Party has thus far maintained its status as a national party. And responding to a question from Flavio, what did you think of Representative Cori Bush's questions? I thought she tried to be as polite as possible, but she asked some of the most pointed questions. Yeah, that's because when it was her turn, she took her job seriously. And she wasn't there to speechify or advance some agenda. She actually wanted some answers. Which was kind of a rarity. She's an excellent congresswoman. Oh, we got about a little over 40 minutes left in the program. We really are sweating the bills. I'm sorry, we're always sweating the bills because, again, this is a working people's program. Nobody's out there writing million-dollar checks or paying to advertise Bose Wave radios or mattresses that made from foam developed by NASA and designed in Sweden. Or buy gold now or chocolate paleo chicken bone beverage. As to the latter, I don't think I'd be doing this if we were existing that way. But we are at 1865, and bad things can happen fairly quickly if we don't knock some of this down. Any help is great help. Let's go to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Sister Robin. How's it going?
Hey, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing well. Christine wanted me to let you know that she has had all of that she is about to put up with the VA. She's damn near sent a war resolution to herself and is marshaling her energies to get them to stop ghosting her. She said ever since she went blind, they start treating her like she's a child instead of a
fully functioning adult.
Well, a fully functioning adult, but not only that, but they make a big to-do about treating veterans with respect. And that includes telling the same said veteran, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. In regards to symptoms and conditions they're observing. So, and I won't get into them because Bill will send me a cease and desist quicker than he can take a bite of that afternoon snack. So, well, I won't go into the reasons why. But I had a couple of questions. Now, did I hear correctly? I was listening to the podcast last night. And Am I to understand that there may be a problem with a future Republican candidate for Senate because he was involved with a skeevy, phonied up child rescue organization?
You are correct, sir.
Why does that not surprise me? I mean, hell.
I wasn't. I was repulsed. I was repulsed and nauseated by the entire story.
Well, it doesn't surprise me, Robin. I mean, after all, look who they elected as president. I mean, I remember there were several women who'd come forward complaining that Donald Trump had sexually abused them, including a couple of women who at the time were around the age of 15. And they withdrew their complaint after receiving several death threats. Gee, I'm seeing a migratory pattern here, Robin.
I don't think it's even a matter of pattern, Dave. It's baked in. It's DNA. It's It's part of their autonomic nervous system or something.
I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I kept hearing you talk about this story. I'm like, where? And I'm thinking to myself, fuck the Mexican authorities. No offense to
there's a long history of presumptive bigotry, and I may have been guilty of it in saying,
that's not what I'm driving at.
I wonder how much it costs to buy them off, you know.
Well, and there is a lot of that down there, but what these idiots don't seem to understand is that there are U.S. laws against going to another country and doing something like that, then coming back. You can be charged under U.S. law for that.
And it seems like these rogue operations, but again, you know why it can't be touched, right?
Well, he's running for office.
No. He is expected to be a candidate. But there's not, I don't think he's announced, but, and frankly, in a place like Utah, and our Utah members of the Horn Family Community Congregation back there behind the Zion Curtain can tell me if I'm wrong, but that'll play really well with a lot of people. The reason they can't be touched is because of the way our present jurisprudence looks at the First Amendment. Perhaps it is cynical on my part, Dave, but the fact of the matter is, all this grifter has to say is that the group OUR was acting on their sincerely held religious beliefs. Even if they're tap dancing on the constitutional right of the federal government to set foreign policy and the right of the executive branch to make treaties and agreements with other nations. If this was a secular, I mean, there's a big difference, say, between Jose Andres's organization, World Kitchen.
Right.
That goes in where natural disasters are anywhere on Earth and makes sure people are fed.
Yes, I know about them. I love
World
that.
World Central Kitchen. There's a big difference between that and going in and trying to supplant the ability of law enforcement in another country to do their own damn jobs. And it's pretty shameful, really, that a county prosecutor's office was involved with this, affiliated themselves with this. That lawyer should have known better. But then again, assuming that this was coming out of Utah, that prosecutor, that lawyer, is probably a part of the cult. And I'm not saying that the victims of child trafficking should be just left to... No, hell no. It's one of the greatest evils perpetrated on this planet today. But it is the job of the federal government to help to stop that. Not some religious zealot, some religious maniac running a grift, a tax-exempt grift, to go on vacations to Cabo San fucking Lucas and fondle the breasts of a 16-year-old girl.
Yeah, I'm out $1,000.
Well, they weren't his $1,000 to begin with, because they came from parishioners and church members digging deep into their pockets, thinking that they were funding an effort to save child trafficking victims when in fact it was they were payoffs to pimps to grope little girls.
Well, Robin, I think they might write this off as their missionary work.
Yes, and it just like the hymn at the beginning of the program, and it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. And you will never convince me that skeevy bastard wasn't down there and, you know, okay, let's give him the benefit of the doubt, even though he doesn't deserve it, that he didn't fuck some underage girls. Mas chicas. But you won't convince me that he didn't fuck some overage ones.
Well,
that is who conservatives are. They are vulgar, perverted, ugly, and everything they complain about 99 times out of 100, 999 times out of 1,000, they're goddamn doing. Sorry, yelling. I apologize, Dave.
All right. Now, let's move on to something where you can lower your blood pressure a little and maybe get a couple of giggles. I've heard the blessed name of Sacha Cohen mentioned.
Sacha Baron Cohen, yes. Peace be upon him. Even now, and he ain't dead.
You know, where is Sacha when you need him? That's what I'm asking.
But the thing is,
I've seen him do a bit where he draws out white supremacists.
Oh yeah, I remember playing that clip on the show.
Because
let's throw the Jews down the well.
It really embarrasses these assholes because Mr. Cohen ain't exactly a Christian.
No, he is what has been referred to in the past as a Red Sea pedestrian.
And these guys are yupping all the way up until the reveal, and then they get this dumbass look on their face. Like, we've been had. But, I need a major bottle of Pepto-Bismol around me anytime I deal with these people. And these are people that members of my own family, not my sisters, but like my brother and my nephew and my dad and several of my uncles would all be goose stepping behind the orange moron, regardless of what happens. It doesn't matter what you say. Well, we don't need proof. We got faith. I can understand the faith in God, but a faith in Donnie? I mean, the man has grifted his way through his life. He's ripped off everybody he's ever been in business with. He's fucked around on all of his wives. And one time, I remember right after he was elected, Joy Reid was interviewing him on MSNBC, and he said, and they were talking about the allegations of hush money payments to Stormy Daniels and Ms. McDougal. And he said, do I have to pay for it? I wish Joy Reid at that moment had made television history and said, yes, Mr. President, you do. But she would have been summarily shit-canned had she done it. But I wish she had. Because the look in her eyes was like, I want to say it, I'm not going to say it, but I want to say it. You can just tell. And they're still afraid of him. It's not Donald Trump they're afraid of. They're afraid of his maggot-ass followers. Donnie Trump on his own is
yes, who have a lot of guns.
Yeah. And their First Amendment right is telling you what to think and believe at the point of a gun. That's their deeply held religious belief, Robin. Because we can't have homeless firearms in this country, by God.
Oh, wait a minute. We can't have homeless firearms.
Nor should we should there not be plentiful ammunition to feed them? Because we don't want homeless and hungry firearms.
Well, what did Chairman Mao say? War is politics at the muzzle of a gun. Something like that. Am I close?
I used to hang around the political science department at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. And one of the professors had a poster that looked a lot like an English language propaganda sheet done by the Chinese Communist Party that said, democracy comes through the muzzle of a gun. I believe the quotation is revolution comes from the muzzle of a gun, or something like that. It's a quote from Chairman Mao.
Yeah, I recall it being Mao. Liberal talker quotes Chairman Mao.
Well, when you act like a totalitarian dickwad, any totalitarian will do. Communist or fascist, it doesn't matter. They're the same side of the same coin. They use the same tactics. I mean, I've been called the dirty, filthy, ageist communist.
Well, look, I mean, you got the Moms for Liberty. Sit. Out there, favorably quoting Hitler.
You mean the brown skirts?
Yes, the brown skirts. Of course the brown skirts. I had forgotten. And then you've got the lieutenant governor of North Carolina who wants to be governor saying, hey, what's so wrong with quoting Hitler? He said some good things.
Uh-huh. And Mussolini made the trains run on time, too. Uh-huh.
Yeah, until, you know, the Allies blew up the train tracks, I mean.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, Pope Frank's parents, his daddy, had a job on the Italian railroad. He could have kept it during World War II, but he decided that Mussolini was too much for him, and he moved his family to the warm climes of Argentina, where young Jorge was born. So, Pope Frank is the man he is today because his dad made the proper decision to leave Italy. What bothers me is, you know, I hear all this talk of, well, if Trump gets elected, I'm going to leave the country. Yeah, well, there's some of us who cannot leave. And even if we wanted to, I don't think I'd want to leave. As fucked up as my beloved state is, I feel like I've got to stay here and raise unholy hell to make them less comfortable in their fascism. I mean, I find it hilarious that, well, you got Bishop Willard leaving the Senate. you've got Ava Hitler's great nephew,
Mike
Braun, running for governor in Indiana. I don't think he's announced, but he's making noises like he doesn't want to be a senator no more and run for the governor's office here in Indiana. Just what we need. A guy who can't do his job in the Senate decides that maybe governing a state would be a lot easier. I think he's been talking to Joe Manchin. Oh yeah, I think you do a great job, Mike. Go ahead and do it. Oh.
Yeah, that sounds about right. By the way, Billable Rick says, please tell Dave he can't ruin my afternoon snack today. I've already had my afternoon snack, thus please tell Dave it's too late for him to ruin it. Yeah.
Well, okay. I added the, yeah. Thank you, Billable.
Clarence has the full Mao quote now. All political power comes from the barrel of a gun. It's in the little red book.
Yeah, okay.
Clarence reminds us. Yeah.
Thank you for the quotation.
Thank you, Clarence. Oh, and by the way, thank you to Kevin in Massachusetts, and thank you to Texas Tea. We are down to, ta-da, 1,790. If we could do $91 more, we won't be $2,000 in the hole tomorrow. $91. I get lost in all the siren.
Well, you've never been a mathematical girl.
No, and I mean, it's just, this is what. But still, I managed to grieve the fact that they've nuked the math doctorate at West Virginia University because, you know, hillbillies don't need no doctorates of math. I hate it. I love my university, Harvard on the Mon. And West Virginians need lots more mathematicians, not less. I'm living proof. But then again, they nuked my part of the English major too. So.
Well, if they're not the wholly owned subsidiary of the fossil fuel industry, what good are they in West Virginia, Robin?
Well, the funny thing is, they had at one point in time a world renowned school of mining engineering.
Don't tell me they scrapped that too.
They didn't get rid of it altogether, but they folded it into the School of Petroleum Engineering.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of still there. It's embarrassing, really.
And Joe Manchin is considering trying to become the president of your beloved alma mater?
That's the rumor. If in fact the numbers show him that he is going to get his ass handed to him by a man who can't even walk across a stage. That's not ableism.
And baby dog. Don't forget baby dog.
Baby dog can get across the stage.
His butt with one paw tied behind his back.
Yeah, baby dog can manage it.
Yeah.
But make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice has so far let himself go. That I don't know if he could even go 9 rounds of golf with Nitwit Nero, and Nitwit Nero can barely get out of the golf cart now. I don't know what it is with these old men.
Well, maybe he's got a demon in the legs now where he can't walk like me.
It could be. I mean, his diabetes just may be completely out of control. I don't know.
Because
this isn't like FDR, okay?
No. And there are only like two or three pictures of Roosevelt in a wheelchair. And it wasn't a secret that he used a wheelchair. That's what a lot of people don't understand. But in public appearances, he would have his son
being undertaken. Steve?
Allowing to hold on to his arm while he swung his legs back and forth, pretending to be able to walk on his own. I mean, we've come a long way in that now you can actually show someone in a wheelchair or on crutches without it being a... But it's still used against them if they run for political office. And has anybody ever pointed out that Donald Trump is only 18 months younger than Joe Biden? So that puts pace to the argument of age. Although I am looking forward to Donald Trump leading the country into World War II again, maybe he'll call on the Continental Air Force to come in and do airstrikes.
Oh, dear God, yes. maybe a repeat of the Battle of Bowling Green.
Yeah, who could ever forget the Battle of Bowling Green? And I love the excuses they gave at the time. Oh, he had rain in his eyes. Well, that doesn't stop him. That doesn't impel him to make a statement about the Continental
Air Force. Excuses be damned. It's cognitive decline, okay? Plain and simple. You know, you don't just wake up one morning and you've got full-blown Alzheimer's. It took his Klansman daddy a long time to get to end stage.
And Fred Christ Trump was, I believe, in his early 90s when he died, and he was completely gone by then.
Yeah, well, it is a horrifying thing to behold. Even if you're not the one with it.
My grandfather had dementia. It's not something I would even wish on.
No, I watched it happen to someone I love dearly in my family. Okay?
You and I both know, Robin, that you need early treatment.
Yeah.
If you're going to give someone a quality of life.
I mean, I don't know what the current Alzheimer's dementia/dementia regimen is pharmacologically, but I remember years and years ago there was something, 20 years ago, something called Aricept came out that would at least slow the progress if you caught it early enough. But I knew someone who was on that, and in the end, it just didn't matter. I think in a way, and I understand the thought process behind this, but yeah, because once it happens, once it's in progress, it's nothing that anyone who loves anyone who has it wants people to publicly see. But the fact of the matter is, the barking and grunting and hooting of the old 666 brigade notwithstanding, anybody with two brain cells to rub together could see that by the end of his presidency, old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, was well down the road to where he would eventually...
I think one of the saddest letters that I ever read was the last letter that Reagan wrote to the American public in general, but to his supporters in general, explaining that he had dementia. And I remember hearing Ron Reagan talking about when his dad died. Or before his dad died, Mike Devers had given him a replica of the White House that they had put into an aquarium. And Ronald Reagan had fished it out of the fish tank, and Nancy said, "Ronnie, what have you got there?" He goes, "I don't know, but it has something to do with my past." He couldn't even remember being president of the United States.
Yeah, as has been said, at the end of his life, the only person who didn't know Ronald Reagan was president of the United States was Ronald Reagan. And even though I didn't like the old coot, it is still a horror.
I find that extremely sad. I didn't agree with Reagan on 99% of the shit he did, but I wouldn't wish that on anyone.
No, and I know people, you know, trigger warning. I've known people who said, "Well, you know, that's part of why I have a gun." You know, if it ever gets obvious that, and my response was to say, "Yeah, that's what you think. But when that time comes, you won't have the ability to know that that's what you wanted to do."
No,
and it's pathetic. But the point I was going to make is that, you know, once he was diagnosed, as is so often the case, you know, Reagan just disappeared, went into hiding, not even into hiding. He just withdrew from public visibility, and that gives you an idea of how awful it was. The great, great Glenn Campbell, who before he was ever a singer and a superstar, was one of the greatest guitar pickers among studio guitarists.
Oh, I love Glenn Campbell's work.
There was a video not long before he died, I think taken by his daughter. And even though he was gone in every other sense of the word, if he put a guitar in his hands, he could still play. That part was still there.
I've got relatives who are nurses, and they'll tell me that they have Alzheimer's patients they take care of. They can tell you with absolute clarity what happened in the 1940s or the 1950s when they were younger. And they can tell you right down to the colors, the smells, everything about an event in their lives. But they couldn't remember what day it is or what they had for lunch.
Yeah, apparently the short-term memory goes first. But in the overall scheme of things, I think, and I wonder about the level of denial necessary, Dave, in these maggot true believers, who, I mean, prayer meeting Wednesday, it's biblical. They can see Joe Biden stumble over a word because he's dealt lifelong with stutter, and swear that he, well, as Nancy Mace said, "We just got our clock cleaned by a man who can't find his pants." She has no knowledge of that. And she certainly has no sympathy for anyone who has cognitive difficulties. But the fact
that who else had a lifelong stammer?
Yeah.
There's someone else that Republicans will hold up as an icon of virtue. Is Winston Churchill.
Yes. Yes, you're right.
Churchill. As great an orator as he was, that was all practiced and rehearsed.
And every one of his, of his quips, every one of his wisecracks was memorized.
And the thing of it is, if you want to know about this in detail, I recommend the book by Roy Jenkins called Churchill. Roy Jenkins was a member of Parliament who served with Churchill at the end. And in deference to his service to the country, the speaker would defer to Churchill first when he would call upon a member to speak. He would see if Churchill had risen to speak, and if he had, he would recognize him first before any of the other members of the House. But he only did so on two occasions, according to Roy Jenkins' biography. But he had served in the Parliament for over 50 years total, and which is an amazing figure. There were only like four or five other people in British history at that time who'd ever done something like that.
Well, I kind of want to return to the original topic there for just a second, and that is that the maggots can see the beam that is in Biden's eye, but they are utterly oblivious to the mote in their own. Because they can see something as something like a stutter on a guy who in his 80s can still ride a bicycle and swear that he's incompetent. But they can't look at their god emperor who can't make it down a slope without running the risk of falling on his ass or his face.
And
as a consequence, they are actually willing to turn the country back over to someone who is in obvious mental decline, where Biden isn't. Now, I want to share a couple of things with you because I had a note from Arnold. Going back to Christine's frustrations, Dave, Arnold says, as a lifelong visually impaired, legally blind person, people talk to me like I'm a child, even after shaving my head. A mechanic, a radio engineer, an all-around doer of things, yet men will yell in my face like I'm a child. So Christine's experience is far from unique. That is not to say it isn't wrong, but,
As a matter of fact, a couple months after her stroke, after she came out of the coma, she told me, honey, I now understand why you were so angry all the time. And I said, oh, why? She said, able-bodied people infantize you, or try to. And when you object, then it's your fault.
Right. Now, the other thing I want to address is something else that Arnold said, that Biden looks more wrecked. I don't know how you come to that conclusion. I see nitwit Nero out there galumphing around, walking like a fucking Oompa Loompa. And I see.
You mean the guy that needs the golf cart just to get down the hallway?
The guy who has to park his golf cart on the first cut of fringe, and can't walk from the cart path to the green, let alone walk 18 holes. Yeah, that guy. Whereas Biden walks erect. Is pretty damn physical, but
he speaks in complete sentences.
Yes, has never told us about the Battle of Bowling Green or the Continental Air Force or said hamburgers or covfefe. Arnold continues and said, I love the program, but no one running for president should be in either of their situations. If the best we have is Biden, we're fucked. Biden handed nitwit Nero his ass 3 years ago. I don't think there's any reason to think he can't do it again. He has done more progressive things. He has signed more progressive legislation and backed more progressive policies than anyone since FDR, without interning the Japanese. And I just don't get it. I don't know how, like, a David Ignatius writes that tripe about how we've got to tell Biden to stand aside. For who? Okay, for who? Now, I love Gavin Newsom. And might be right there for him in 28. I like Kamala Harris. But this is still a racist country. And I don't know how to say this without getting myself in trouble. I think the white lash would be brutal. And the one thing that I keep coming back to, Dave, is, oh my God, how short is our memory? Of course, you know, we may, in some cases, there are people who do not remember the 1980 Democratic presidential nomination battle, where Edward M. Kennedy almost guaranteed Jimmy Carter's loss by primary.
Well, I find, you know what I find, Chad, Robin? A presidential candidate playing grab ass on a yacht in the 1980 presidential election can be run out of the race, but a candidate
that was 84
who plays grab ass with any woman that moves gets elected to the presidency in the 2000s.
Yeah, sure. And you know, there's another rule of thumb at work here, and I got to go because we're out of time. But there is an old saying, and I always learned it in terms of looking for a new job. You don't quit your job and then start looking for a new one. You look for the new job while you still got the old job, because it's twice as hard to find a job when you don't have one as it is when you do. And that gets distilled into the saying of, never get off the lame horse you're on until you've got a new horse to ride. And I think Biden is far from lame. He's quick. He's quick-witted. He's smart.
Given the majority in the House and the Senate, and watch him run.
Yeah, watch what happens. And you know, by the same token, I mean, have I inveighed against the gerontocracy? Yes, I have. And I generally, I worry about these things. But here's another thing I worry about. I remember the Great Purity Wars of 2016. Okay, I remember Bernie or Bust. I remember Jill fucking Stein. And out there, hopefully he's not. The media fascination is over now, but you know, rotted FK is still out there, and there is no way that he is fit for the White House. I mean, the Oppo research on his philandering has probably already been done. And God knows the anti-vax stuff and the overt racism of his anti-vax stuff. And
you know, when your own family is backing away from you and your family happens to be
backing, they're running. Kennedy. They are sprinting away from him. But the thing is, if there is some sort of primary process, it's not like everybody's going to unite behind one candidate. the purity wars will be on again. And you'll have somebody or bust. Maybe there'll be a contingent behind Kamala. Or maybe there'll be a plan where he just hands it over to her. Remember, that horrible woman, Nimrata Haley, out of South Carolina, who is a presidential candidate, I guess, and who proudly recently proclaimed that she is a proud union buster. She has said, we cannot turn the country over to Kamala Harris for four more years. Either wishfully praying for the death of the President of the United States, which is just so fucking odious as to be nauseating. I mean, even when Nitwit Nero had COVID, I was behind this microphone saying, let him live, because the maggots will lose their fucking minds if he dies and set fire to this country. I don't do that kind of thing. But a former governor of South Carolina and former ambassador to the United Nations is somehow hoping Joe Biden isn't the president by the time the 2024 election comes around? That's hateful shit. And by the way, Matt in San Francisco, in regard to Kamala Harris, Matt in San Francisco says, I know what you're saying, girl. As I always say, Kamala Harris has something. That indescribable quality. She's never lost a race, and she's the fucking vice president. You can't do all that unless you're at the top of the class. We would be a better country if we elected Kamala, although we can collectively do that has yet to be determined. And I think Matt just distilled everything I was thinking into what I was unable to say. I would have no problem with her whatsoever as president.
Under a Haley administration, who would she name as the potential ambassador to Bonomo?
I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming. And I tell you what, you'll get the last word tonight, Dave. Thank you so much. Give our best to Christine.
I will. Take care of yourself, girl.
I sure will. You do the same. Later, Dave. And that's Dave in the Blind out in Taliban, Indianapolis. Still waiting to hear if Dave has tried the poutine yet. So that's the program. And even a couple of extra minutes. Thanks, everybody, for joining in this evening, and thank you for listening to the podcast. Thank you so much. It's a beautiful little community y'all have built here. We close the program at 1790, so that means we will be at 2090 tomorrow, barring activity by the overnight crew. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks, everybody, this evening. It means a lot. It's just an uphill climb. Thank you. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thanks, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Remember, like and subscribe to the podcast, please. Leave a comment. Help the algorithms know we're here. Share the podcast with your friends, your neighbors, like-minded individuals. Yeah, feel free to call the program. New callers are always fun. I love meeting new members of the community via the phone. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Visit, pop by, see what Coal River Mountain Watch is up to. Proud union shop in this, the time of union resurgence. And 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Stay safe. Time to schedule that booster. Well, wear your mask, even if you're not around maggots, but especially if you are. Wash your hands, don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance where possible. And if some babbling asshole comes down the sidewalk talking about how January the 6th and John Fetterman's fashion choices are the same thing, well, ignore Eric Erickson, avoid Eric Erickson like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Love you, Wayne. Later.